because when we watch our breath, it slows down. The breath and the mind are connected. So either the breath slows down and the mind slows down, or the mind catches hold of one thing, which is the name. And the name has its power by itself, as you know. So the name has its own power.
Namaste, everyone. It's Nina Rao again, and I'm so honored to have with me one of my favorite people in the world, for her loving presence, but also for the great inspiration that she provides for me and many others. And she's very humble and modest about it, but still agreed to be with us today. So I'd like to introduce you to Nanima, who you can see on the screen right here. I met Nanima properly for the first time in 2016 in Rishikesh, when I accompanied Krishnadas for a benefit concert that he was doing for Ganga Prem Hospice. Nanima is the creator and the sustainer and of Ganga Prem Hospice, which I think, and she will correct me if I'm wrong, is the only cancer patient hospice entity, especially in North India. And well, we'll get to that a little bit later, but I was so inspired by her work and then meeting her and being hugged by her. I felt like I was being loved by the great mother herself. So welcome, Nanima. Thank you so much for being here. So that giggle is something that I love too. It's 11:30 at night here in New York and 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sure Nanima has already had almost half a day, given the way her life is, right?
Yeah.
So Nanima, before we start talking about Ganga Prem Hospice, which I really would love to talk about, I'd love to hear more about you. You know, we've never had a chance to really sit down and talk about your life. And when I left Rishikesh this time, I thought, I really would like to know how you got on this path. And I know everyone would love to as well. So can you share a little bit about where you were born, where you were raised, and then how it is that you reached the place where you decided to come to India? At a very young age, as a spiritual seeker.
Oh, okay, Nina, that's quite long. I was born in England, in the West Country, in Bath, a place called Bath, it's Hot Springs. And when I was 3 months old, I was in a car accident. From which I had to spend more or less the next 13 years in hospital. So that was very wonderful for learning a lot of things. And I was brought up as a Christian. And when I was 7 or 8 years old, I had some beautiful experiences with Jesus. Then, because I was on my own in the hospital was a long way from my home, so my parents couldn't visit very often. And the doctors always said, better than coming sometimes, better don't come at all. So when everybody else was having visitors, I used to hide in the toy cupboard. And that's where I had beautiful experiences with Jesus. So I believed very, very much in God, in Bhagwan. But when I was about 16, he didn't do something I asked him to do. So I got cross with him. And then I started to question. And in the church that I was, we had adult baptism. So I had to say some things which I didn't believe in. I had to say that Jesus is the only way to God. And I had never believed that there could be one way, there could be an only way. And so I said, well, what about everybody else in the world that never heard of him? So they said, well, everybody will get, when they die, they'll have a chance once. I said, that's not a fair chance, to become a Christian. That's not fair. That was one thing. And the other thing was eternal hell. I couldn't believe. I said, if you do something wrong, you go to jail for a certain amount of time. You can't have eternal punishment. So then they said, well, you have to say these things. And I said, well, I'm not going to because I don't believe them. So then my father said, okay, you're 16, you're old enough to make your own decision as far as spirituality is concerned. So I stopped a little bit going to church, and I started to enjoy myself for quite a few years.
How did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, how everybody enjoys themselves at that age, all sorts of naughty things. And then when I was 18, I went to university. And there I had a lot of, thought, a lot of questions, always so many questions. And because I was angry with Jesus, and I'd been let down by the church in that they weren't giving me answers to my questions. So there's a hole if you don't have Bhagwan. There's a, you're just on your own with your mind, and there's nothing there. So you try this, you try that, you try the other, but there isn't anything except Bhagwan. They're only, no enjoyment. They just don't work. They don't. There's nothing there. You're still hollow inside. So then, when I was about maybe in my third year, I started to hear about India, and I always wanted to go to India. They used to laugh at me when I was a little girl because when I heard the word India, I used to say, I'm going to India. And everybody used to say, where is it? And of course, I didn't know where it was. So then I would be quiet. And next door to my auntie, where I used to go and stay, there were Indians living. And I used to poke my head through there was a hole in the fence. And I used to poke, they were so beautiful. They were so beautiful. They wore beautiful colored saris, and everything smelled so nice. And there were so many children. And I was on my own in my auntie's house. And I thought, this is so miserable. So I used to make an excuse and go out from her house to buy some sweets or something, just so that I could see the Indians. I think there was a sand jar there. And when I left university, we could get a cheap ticket to India or to America. Stupidly, I chose America. I'm sorry. But stupidly, I chose America. And then I was there for 3 weeks, traveling up the East Coast, across Canada, and down the West Coast. But then when I came back to England again, I wasn't liking anything that I was supposed to be doing. And I kept hearing more and more and more about India. So And then I heard about ashrams, and somebody told me. Oh, then I lived in Morocco for nearly a year. I mean, Morocco, Spain, Amsterdam, all over the place, Paris. And then it was always India, India, India. And I got a little picture of Shivji from somewhere. Somebody told me he was Krishna. I had no idea who he was. But I liked it so much, I used to keep it in my purse. And it got creased. So then I put it on some cardboard and it was standing in my bedroom. And I liked it so much, I used to decorate it with flowers. And I used to light incense, so I put the incense near it. You know, they call Shiva Bolinath. Bolinath, it means, the simple. And so I think he must have accepted that as puja. It wasn't meant to be, but Bhagwan is so generous. And then I decided to come to India. So those were the days when things were very different. So I came with a girlfriend over land.
You did. I wondered about whether you
I did. That's how you what you do when you're young.
Yeah.
I don't know how many secrets I'm telling now, but we hitched across Europe and to Turkey, and then in Turkey, it possibly wasn't safe to hitchhike, so we sold some blood. No, then we did, yes. Then we went on a train. Sorry, I'm telling too many stories, am I?
No, I love these stories. This is exactly what I wanted to hear.
These were the old days. So then we got a train to Ankara. Then from Ankara to Tehran, there was a bus, and we met lovely people. They would have, let us stay in the houses. Then from Tehran to Kabul in a bus. Then I stayed in Kabul a little bit. There was no fighting anywhere then.
Right. Can you tell us which year that was, Nanima? Which year was it?
That was 71. I mean, I reached India in 71. It took me about 3 months, I think, to get to India overland.
So that was just when the war might not have begun between India and Pakistan at that point.
No, it was just after.
Just after.
Yes, because that was how things worked out when I was in India, because I couldn't go beyond a certain point.
That makes sense.
Because I was a foreigner. And
did you feel just as just a separate question, but traveling as a young woman at that time, did you feel unsafe in any way?
Yes, sometimes I got scared. My friend got very scared. She went back from Kabul. So I was left on my own, but I had met some other people. I felt scared sometimes in Morocco when I was hitching on my own.
Okay. So you landed in India. Where did you land up? Where did you land up when you landed in India?
Amritsar. We had to cross on foot from Pakistan. And I don't know why. But when I crossed over into India, I just fell on my knees and kissed the ground, I mean, it was, which I didn't even know how to do. But it was just, it was just wonderful. I was just like, home, I'm home.
Yeah, you're home, Bhumi Devi. Wow.
Yeah.
So then, you've landed in India, home for millions of people.
Yeah.
search of something, what were you looking for when you came? If you remember at that time, what was in your mind?
It was always the same, Nina. Ever since I remember, I wanted to know the truth. You know, I never believed in anything. And, you know, when I was little in the hospital, I used to think, what is this? What is this? Why? Why are people so miserable? Why are people hurt? Why? You know, never any answers, never any proper answers. So that's what I was looking for. And I knew before I came, I heard about India, that there were gurus. They would teach you the way to liberation. And I thought, that sounds really good.
So liberation from this feeling of suffering and pain.
Yes, I didn't really know what liberation meant. But I can't say, I mean, I always enjoyed life, but I suppose the way you look at it, it wasn't all roses for me. You know, I don't think it is for anyone, actually.
No, but it was hard, you know, suffering that kind of accident as a girl, and that's a lot, for sure.
Yeah, and all sorts of things, you know. I think many, many people get let down in life, you know, whether it's in their families, which it also was for me, wherever it is, you know, it's just Hamasa, you're always let down. So I didn't think it was good. I wasn't crazy about life.
You weren't satisfied.
No. No.
So at that point, you're like in your early 20s, yeah?
When
you're...
I was 22.
22. Okay. And so then, because one of the questions people ask me all the time is, you know that I spent a lot of time with Siddhima and I consider her my guru.
Yeah.
And, you know, she sort of found me. And like they say, you don't look for your guru, even though that's what you were doing. And the guru finds you. So how did that happen? How did that happen for you?
I reached Babaji within a month of being in India. And, I was sort of like following the clues. So I was traveling with somebody or other to Almora. And it was in Almora that I heard people doing kirtan. And I'd heard it once or twice in London. Hare Krishna people had just started. So there were all these people going along playing kirtan, playing cymbals and singing kirtan. And there was one foreigner, so I rushed up to him and grabbed his arm and said, "What are you doing?" it sounded really nice. And then he said, we're doing kirtan. So I said, "What's kirtan?" So he said, "We're singing Bhagwan Kinam." So then I said, "Okay." And he said, "Our guru told us to do it." And I said, "Oh, where do the gurus live?" And he said, he just looked at me like I was crazy. And he said, "They live by the Ganga." So I rushed back to the hotel and got a map out. And then I looked for the nearest place on the Ganga, which was Badrinath. So I got on a bus. To go to Badrinath. I left the people I was with. I mean, they were just traveling. So I left them and I got on a bus. There were some other foreigners on the bus going to Kanchi. And they kept saying that you come to our guru in Kanchi. So I said, "Is Jangaji there?" And they said, "No." Then I said, I don't know what sort of guru that is. He's not by Ganguly. Because, you get things stuck in your head. So they told me about Maharaji. And, it all sounded good, except that it wasn't on the Ganga. And I had that stuck in my head now that I. So they got off at Kanchi. Somewhere near, and I went on. I couldn't get to Badrinath because of the war, because there was a point where they said no foreigners beyond this point.
There's big army checkpoints up there.
Yeah. So I went somewhere else, and then I stayed in my first mandir. And it was actually Bageshwar. There's a big Shiva temple there. And I stayed in a temple there and had all sorts of strange adventures, including my first, they sent me somewhere to bow to Shiva. And I went in there and there was just tiles and this stone in the middle of the floor. It looked something like a toilet or a bathroom. And I was like, so I came back and they said, did you have Shiva's darshan? And I thought, well, I said, yeah, I went into the temple. I didn't see any murti. I didn't see any statue or anything. So I didn't know what the Shiva Lingam was. Anyway, there was an American lady came there who was a sannyasi. And she sort of gave me some type of, explained some things to me, gave me a mala. She took me home and she decided I wasn't suitable to stay with her. She took me back to Almora. So she said, okay, now you're a sadhu. She took all my possessions. I didn't have many. And she gave me white clothes. And she said, now you have to walk to the Ganga. So I said, okay. And so she gave me all these sadhu rules about how I was supposed to live and what little money I had, she took. And she said that, I'm sure she was trying to help me. I was all faith. And she said that, you know, sadhus don't carry money. It never occurred to me to ask why she was taking mine. I think she really meant well. And she taught me some good things. So I said, well, if I have no money, what do I eat? So she said, then somebody will give it to you. I said, okay. So then off I went.
Said, unbelievable. So did you pull out your map and find your way to the Ganga on foot?
No, I mean, she told me the main towns. You go down the hill, you go to Raniket, then you go to Ramnagar. But by that time, of course, she'd given me some cloth shoes to wear. My feet were covered in blisters. And anyway, long story.
Were you walking around barefoot at that time?
No, I had these cloth shoes that she gave me. Before that, I don't remember what they had. Probably some, I don't remember, chattels.
Yeah.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, I was staying in a temple in Ramnagar, and it was Janmashtami, Krishna's birthday, and there was a pundit who came to tell the story there. And he said to me, you know, what are you doing wandering around? I put ash in my hair. And I was a paka sadhu, according to me, of all about 2 weeks. And so he said, you should be with a guru, you know, and I just burst into tears. And I said, you know, that's what I'm looking for. That's what I want. Because that the good thing that American sadhu did, she introduced me to the Gita. She gave me Gita Ji. So I was reading Gita Ji. And in the second chapter, at the end of the second chapter, there's a description of the realized being. And I was really praying, if you're anywhere, if you're anywhere, I want you, I want you, I want you. So then, so he said, my guru lives by the Ganga. And immediately I knew it was Babaji. So I said, oh, please take me. And he said no.
He said no. So just for people who are listening.
Sorry, that's long time. I'm speaking too much.
No, not at all. I just want to, for people who are listening, to just know who is Babaji, if you can say his name.
Babaji, when I reached Babaji, Babaji was, he lived in Rishikesh. And he was a completely dispassionate person in that he just wore one cloth, no shoes, didn't touch money. He lived in a cave. He had no possessions. People, all the offerings that people gave him, he immediately gave out at the same time. He apparently didn't know English, so he was beyond language. And so I found that out. It was, there was no language barrier with him. He was also a Sanskrit scholar. We know very little about his background.
And how was he referred to as, what was he called?
Babaji. We just called him Babaji. And Babaji in India, I mean, you know, it doesn't really, I mean, all sadhus are either Babaji or Maharaji.
Yes.
he was Babaji. He was, they called him, actually, they called him Mastaram Babaji. Mastaram.
So Pandit said no at first that he wouldn't take you to him, and but you did.
Pandit said he wouldn't take me to him, but he just wrinkled up his nose at me. And he said, there's no foreigners living with Babaji. Babaji doesn't speak English. What would you do there? You find an ashram where there are foreigners. But I already knew it was Babaji. You know, I mean, just my heart was just, it knew. And then I thought, oh, now what can I do? Then in the afternoon, you know, he had this thing. He was giving satsang. So I was sitting there as well, though I didn't understand anything. And he was making everybody say ram, 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 as many times as they could. And he would count them on his fingers. So then somebody pointed at me and he shook his head. Somebody was saying, you know, let her do it. And he shook his head and wrinkled up his nose again. And then everybody was saying, no, let her do it. So he said, he called me, he said, come here. And he said, have you ever said ram before? And of course, I wasn't sure that I had ever had said it. So he said, now you take a deep breath and you say ram as many times as you can. So I said, okay. So I took a huge breath and Bhagwan ki kripa, it was just Bhagwan. I don't know. It just went on and on and on in one breath. Ram, 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 ram. And I was watching Pandit's face and his eyes were just getting bigger and bigger. And when I finally ran out of breath, he said, no one but me has ever said so many rams in one breath. So then he said, I'll take you to my guru. He said, now I have to take you to my guru. So he did. So he brought me to Babaji. We went to Hardwar, then the next day we went to Babaji. And it was heaven.
I'm just noticing as you're talking, Nani Ma, is that, you know, so many of us are always trying to find some clarity in which direction to go. And it seems like you made all your decisions really actually fully trusting in your heart, the direction that your heart is in.
Yeah.
And in some way, you know, you're listening to your own inner guru. And here you were, and this led you to the guru and the body.
Yeah.
What happened when you met him?
You know, there were stone steps going down. It was rainy season, Janamashtami, just after. And Gangaji, we used to flood his cave. So he was staying up on the bank above the beach under a tarpaulin sheet. Even walking down the steps, I really knew I was home. I really knew. So we went in under the tarpaulin and Pandiji gave me an apple to give to him. And he was sitting like it was dark under the top wall, and he was leaning against the log, big log, and I couldn't see his face or anything, it was just his silhouette. But it was, oh, it was so peaceful, Nina. And you know, then there were other people, they were sitting around me, and I didn't need to look at him. You know, my heart was, you know, they say your heart is singing. It was singing. It was singing. You know, and I went to the other end of the, and it overlooked Gangaji, you know, and Gangaji was big, big waves. She was so beautiful. You know, and I mean, they were all speaking in Hindi anyway, which I couldn't understand. And then Babaji gave some sweets. I was given some sweets and told to eat them down by the Ganga. So that was great. So I went down there and sat by Gangaji and ate them. It was just, it was wonderful. And then they called me back. And after a little while, Panditji said, he spoke English. He said, okay, so now we're going home. And I said, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay here. He said, no, no, you can't stay here. There's nowhere to stay. You can't stay here. And I said, ask Babaji. So then I said, you just ask Babaji. And Babaji said to him, yes, you stay here. And then Nina, you know, after a little while, two sadhvi ladies came. And they were staring at me and speaking to Babaji and speaking to Panditji. And then Panditji said, oh, you know, a miracle has happened. I said, what's that? He said, Babaji, 3 days ago, there were two ladies quarreling about who should wash his cloth. And he said, I'm going to call a foreign woman. She will wash my cloth. You know, I didn't even think it was strange that he knew I was coming. I didn't think it was strange. I thought, of course he knew. You know.
Oh, that's amazing. So I just as a side thing here, not a side because it's so much part of you. When you did see the Ganga, when you did see Ma Ganga,
yes.
You know, it's such a powerful experience being by her side.
Yes.
And even to just attempt to get a few drops of water feels like such an honor and privilege.
Yes.
So can I ask you a little bit about your relationship with Gangaji and like, what is that for you? How does it feel? Because everybody talks about Ma Ganga as like a living entity, a flowing, yes, God. So
she is. You know, she is. She's so vibrant. And you know, there was a Canadian came to see me. He'd been away from Gangaji for years. And he went to sit by her. And when he came back, he was crying and he said, I've forgotten. I mean, she's amazing. I've been lucky. I've been with her all my life. I mean, all my my life here, most of the time with her. For me, she's, I mean, yes, you have to say mother because nobody else nourishes like she does. I mean, she's so beautiful. Whenever you sit by her, you know, when you meditate by her, when you sit by her, I mean, our whole problem is the mind. But by her, the mind stops. It just stops. I mean, that's her ability. She's wonderful. I mean, she's lovely. I don't know. You can't call her mother because, well, of course you can call her mother. Everybody calls her mother. But I mean, my mother was all right. But you know, I mean, she was fine. I mean, my earthly mother. But you know, I mean, look, when I was little, anyway, I used to cry all the time. Nobody loves me. And my parents used to say, of course we love you, of course we love you. And I wouldn't stop crying. I said, nobody loves me. Because, you know, because a mother's love, Gangaji can give. Father's love, Guru can give. And both of their loves, Bhagwan can give. But, you know, I mean, they try. Everybody tries to give love. But our love is like 1%, not even 1%. It's of Bhagwan's love. You know, so you're lonely until you find Bhagwan. Everybody's lonely. You know, whether you have a partner, whether you have a wife, a husband, whether you have parents, there's something you don't have until you have Bhagwan. Because everybody tries to love, but it's different.
I can understand that. I mean, it's like a continuation of what you were saying when you were young, and everything that you tried that you thought would make you happy just didn't. Yeah.
It doesn't.
So now you've arrived with Babaji. You have the support of Gangaji. You're completely at home in this beautiful land up in the mountain. And he has welcomed you before you even knew that you were invited.
Yes.
So then how did it go from there? What happened for you?
Well, he just adopted me like a little puppy dog or a kitten or something. And, you know, everybody else hated me. I mean, they didn't like me being there. But he did. And I would just sit by him when there was nobody around. And he would teach me things, you know, just point to something, tell me the name in Hindi. And then when he went for a walk by Gangaji, I would walk with him. That's why I said, like a little puppy dog, I just followed him around everywhere.
Did he teach scriptures and things like this, or was he?
I was already reading Gita Ji. So they used to, people, you know, his devotees, they used to do kirtan, they used to sing the Ramayana. Whenever anybody who knew English came, you know, they translated for me. So he used to tell me some things. He told me to keep reading Gita Ji, which I did always to this day. And so in the beginning, it was really just teaching me how to live. He gave me a holiday, Nina. You know, I needed a holiday from the world. I mean, 22 years in samsara. I needed a holiday. He knew it. So he didn't teach me anything, but just being with him was a teaching. You know, he taught me love. He was busy opening my heart. He was busy cleaning, because I'm sure my heart was a big mess. So it was all from his side without any words.
Did he give you any practices, or did you just naturally find a way to?
I was already had this big Rudraksmala, which that lady had given me, and she taught me Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. So I was doing my japa, and I was reading my Gita. So in the beginning, that was all. Then he. When somebody came who knew English, he told me the story of the Ramayana. They were translating it. So he told me the whole story. And then he told me to repeat it. And he was really happy because I remembered the whole story. You know, the whole story.
Did you relate it in English? You told it back in English to the
person? Yes, I told it back in English. Then he got some school books for me so I could learn Hindi, because, you know, there wasn't any, every day somebody didn't come who knew English. So I needed to speak to him. And so then I learned Hindi. Then he gave me Hindi Gita Ji. So then I was Hindi, English, Hindi, English. And then I really wanted to read the Sanskrit. So when I had learned some Hindi, then I told him, I'll read it in Sanskrit. And he said, no, you can't read it in Sanskrit. It's different. And I said, I was very stubborn. So I said, no, it's the same as the Hindi. He said, no, it's not. It's a bit different. It has half letters. You can't do it. So, of course, immediately I took Gita Ji down by Ganga Ji and I started reading the Sanskrit at the top of my voice. And then he came up behind me and he said, Acha, TK. Then he told somebody to teach me how to pronounce it. Now, you know, he taught me all the time. And he was very strict. Very strict.
And in what was he strict? What was...
You know, it was... He would create situations. And teaching situations, you know, as the more I got to understand, the more I went on my spiritual path, the stricter he got. And, you know, I told him once that, Babaji, how come you don't tell other people off? You tell me off all the time. So you know what he said? He said, on whom is my grace? On whom is my grace? Uh-huh. I mean, he said, you know, telling me off was his grace. You know, it made me cross when he told me off because I was so big-headed. You know, and I thought I was so wonderful. Mm. You know, and once he told me, when he was telling me off again, he told me, look, Guru has two hands. One is for slapping and the other one is to hold, to make sure you don't fall down.
I have heard that before. That's amazing. That's, I mean, to accept those hands though, Nanima, like you really have to have some sense of surrender also, isn't it?
Nina, it's hard to, well, you must understand, you understand. But the thing is that you can accept because there's no choice. Mm. you know, once I said to Babaji, well, often I said, but once I said that, you know, Babaji, I'm fed up. This doesn't lead to anything. You know, this stupid tapasya, the stupid study, the stupid everything. Kuchne milti, you don't get anything from all this. And Babaji just looked at me and said, or kya chara hai? That means, what other fodder is there? Chara means fodder. You know, what else is there? And then I knew there isn't anything else. You can't go back because it was horrible. So even if it's horrible on the path, it's not half as horrible as it was without the path.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, he was strict. He became very strict. But he was so soft. He was full of love. You know, I wouldn't have gone. I mean, I could never leave him. I got cross with him once and I said, Babaji, I'm leaving. And he said, okay. Like, okay, what do you mean, okay? And then I said, no, I'm leaving, Babaji, I'm really leaving. I thought, you know, I was so necessary to him, you know, but he just said, okay. And then he turned around, I was following him, he was walking in the garden when I told him I was leaving, and he said, Babaji didn't ask anyone to come here. He doesn't ask anyone to go. If you want to go, go. If you want to stay, stay. And he just walked off. You know, there was no choice.
There was no choice. You ended up being with him and staying there for how long?
It was 16 years until he took samadhi. I never went anywhere. I went once or twice. I had to go for visas. I went once to see my brother in Calcutta, who was in Calcutta, coming to Calcutta. But I went tu aiuti di cacci di Ganga Saga. Probably said, okay, go, but go on a tear theatre, not yes. the, just to see your brother.
Yes.
So then, you know. And otherwise, I never left.
How did you live when you were there? Did you live? I mean, he seemed to live very simply.
Yeah.
Did you do the same?
Very, very simply. Sometimes later on, there was an Indian girl, Madhava. She started to cook there. But in the beginning, there wasn't even any food. Some people went to some people went to Kshetra, you know, to get bhiksha. Some people ate the leftovers from Babaji. People would bring tiffins to feed him. So he would take some food, and then he would ask, who ate today? Then he would ask, who ate yesterday? Who didn't eat yesterday? And then you got the tiffin. Whoever hadn't had food for 2 days, we got the tiffin. And, you know, for sleeping the first few months that I was there, there was a house nearby where some of his devotees were staying. And then they left and the house got locked. And they said to me, take your bag. You know, I had a little bag with a couple of changes of saris. So I took my bag. And then in the evening, when it started to get dark, you know, everybody was leaving. So I said, you know, where shall I sleep? The house is closed. So Babaji said, Jahamurji, I mean, sleep where you want. So it was summer. I found a nice space on the beach and lay down there. About 2 minutes later, a sadhu came and said, Yehane sotai, Babaji kere. And Babaji said that you can't sleep here. Then I said, well, where shall I sleep? And so I went back to Babaji and he said, no, you can't sleep here. The women don't sleep down here, only Baba. So I said, well, where shall I sleep? And he said, sadhus sleep on the ghat. So, I mean, you know, I was all of 22. The ghats were a kilometer away in the village. So I went there and I looked at the sign for the woman's ghat and I went in. And there were all these babas there, beggars and babas, all men, smoking chillums. And of course, they all looked around as soon as I went in. So I thought, okay, this is the women's ghat. God knows what the men's ghat is like. So then I remembered that there was a temple nearby where one of Babaji's devotees had gone. So I went and hid in the temple. She had a room there. And when all the lights went out, I slept outside her door. I thought, okay, you know, when she, if anybody comes, I'll shout. And then I left early in the morning, went back to Babaji. And then he sent me the next night with somebody, but they were so different at home than they were at Babaji. I didn't want to stay there. Mm. So then Babaji gave me, he said, behind the house, there's a little veranda where the cows sit. He said, clear the cow dung and sleep there. So I used to sleep there. So, yeah. And in winter, I just had one small cotton cloth that I put on the ground to sleep on and then half of it on top of me to try and keep warm.
And you're up in the mountains. There's ice.
No, not there. That was not Babaji. He was in Rishikesh.
In the valley, but still.
It was cold.
Yeah. And did you take snan in Gangaji? And that was your regular, yeah.
There was anyway nowhere else to take it. There was no water. Later on, I started to stay in the house. But there was no water, no running water. So everybody bathed at 3 o'clock in the morning, even the kids.
Yeah. Siddhima talked about a lot also, about that was one of her favorite things to do, was to have.
Yeah.
In whatever the temperature was in.
Yeah. Afterwards, I lived in, after Babaji went, I lived in Gangotri, and there, you know, you had to break the ice to bath.
Yeah, I heard about the people. You can tell the story about the well. Why don't you tell us about the well?
Well, there were two wells. There were the well where I used to bathe, because, you know, I had to walk over the ice to get to the bit that was water, and it was very far in the middle. And one day the ice broke, and it's sharp, you know, so it cut me. It cut my leg. So then I thought, and I only just about got out. So then I thought, okay, we have to think of something else. So at the edge of Gangaji, you know, during the day, I broke a hole, like a well, like enough, big enough to bathe in. And then I had a big piece of wood, I mean, a heavy piece of wood. Sorry, Gangaji. But every morning when I came down, you know, it was like just about 2 inches of ice. So then I could break that easily.
Right, in the same spot, that makes sense.
Yeah, in the same spot. You know, I made it circular. Am I talking too much?
No, I'm just, you know, I asked somebody, I was talking to somebody about you. Actually, it was Diane. And one of the things she said was, she said, you know, Nanima is probably the most devoted and disciplined person she's ever known. And, you know, I'd love to know a little bit about, you know, Nanima, just in being with you and seeing how you, I literally was describing how it is when I saw you walking through Ganga Prem. You know, you, to me, it feels it's like effortlessly. You just float, you know, everything that's going on, what needs to be done here, there, you know, about the patients, you know, about the supplies in the hospice. Like, and at the same time, you've already had half a day before you've even arrived there. So, I know for all of us who are trying to do sadhana and some kind of practice, can you share a little bit about what is your daily, what does your daily look like?
Well, now I get up in the morning around 4. It's moved up a bit from 3. I used to really beat myself up if I didn't get up at 3. Now I use the excuse of being old. So then I get up and have my bath and everything. Then I sweep the temple. And then I bring the prasad that I've already got ready the day before from the kitchen. And then I put it by Babaji. It's still dark. Then I do some chanting until it gets light. And then when it gets light, I pick the flowers. And then when I bring the flowers, Penny Babaji, I give Babaji his bath and his tilak first. Then I do Shivji puja. And then I do my chanting. Then I, when it gets light, I bring the flowers. Then I, you know, offer Babaji the flowers, decorate him.
You make and a mala, right?
No, not now. I used to. Now, in that, you know, there were big flowers. There are here as well, but gradually the mala has fallen by the wayside. So he has to have an ordinary mala, and I stick flowers in it. So see, I'm telling you, I'm lazy now. He should have a mala, but he doesn't. He doesn't get a mala. I mean, he gets lots of flowers, and he gets this pretend mala. I stick the flowers in the other mala.
And these are the flowers you grow in your own garden, right? You grow them.
Yes, there's always flowers in the garden. Always, you know, that's our job. The flowers in this ashram, we also have vegetables. We have a lot of vegetables, but flowers are very important because puja, we need flowers. So there's always flowers. They're the priority wherever we are to make sure there's going to be flowers all the year round. And then I do aarti, and then that takes it to around 7:30. Then I go to the kitchen. We have someone who helps her. I help her, sometimes help her make the breakfast if she knows how to do it. Then I come back to my room and wash my clothes until she's ready. And otherwise I help her make breakfast. Then after breakfast, I try to have my mornings for sadhana, which is usually a little bit of swadhyaya and meditation. But here it doesn't work because here there's constantly something about the hospice. And Pooja lives in the ashram, so she comes to ask me that this or that. But I try until 12 o'clock to give it to Bhagwan.
When you sit to meditate, do you have a technique that you learned, or do you follow your breath? Can you just give some guidance about how you meditate?
See, when I started to meditate, Babaji said that I had studied enough. I studied and studied for about 8 years. Then he said, now stop studying. You should know. You should have the point by now. And then the guidance he gave me two guidances. He said, never be afraid. You're only going home. That was one thing he said. And the other thing he said was he gave the in Gita Ji chapter 6, I think it's verse 25 and 6. There's two verses which we call the heart of meditation. And whatever method anybody gives you, it just says slowly, slowly. Take your mind from everything and put your mind in the self or Bhagwan. And the next verse says, whenever the mind flies out, then bring it back again. That's all that meditation is about. Somebody in front of me asked, but Babaji, it says put your mind in the self. When we don't know what the self is, then how can we put our mind there? Right. And Babaji just said, take your mind away from everything else. Right. What's left is the self. So he told me to put away all my books and just meditate. And so I did that for 8 years with him and many years afterwards. And he said, that if you have trouble with your mind, which we often do, people often do, you can watch your breath or you can repeat the name of Bhagwan. You can repeat mantras, but, better than mantra is a name, and better than names is one syllable. Because one syllable is easier. Mantras can be long and you get lost in the mantras. It's all right because the mantras have their own power. But really for one-pointedness, one syllable mantras or maximum two are the best. That is why, for meditation, Ram, Shiva, these very short Om, they are the best because it's just like one mantra. For some people, they prefer to watch the breath. By watching the breath, it means not trying to control the breath, not doing anything with the breath, but simply watching it. because when we watch our breath, it slows down. The breath and the mind are connected. So either the breath slows down and the mind slows down, or the mind catches hold of one thing, which is the name. And the name has its power by itself, as you know. So the name has its own power. And either of these methods just slows the mind down. And when the mind slows down, it becomes one pointed. When it becomes one pointed, Bhagwan ki kripa hota, so it disappears. So I didn't have any tarika. That's the only thing that I.
Padne se sab pura ho jata hai. Okay, so I want to go back. Are you okay to talk some more for a little bit?
I'm okay if you're okay. It's the middle of your night.
Okay. Your time, our time with the guru in the body is so precious. And yes. So you've shared so much of your time with him. 16 years is a long time, and there's so much that can be said about our time with the guru that you can't even really speak about, because the experience is sort of inexplicable in a certain way.
Yes.
So when he took samadhi, did you know that it was going to happen in advance, or was it something that happened spontaneously? And how can you kind of describe a little bit of that experience?
No, Nina, I mean, although I never believed it, it was the Kumbh. There was a Kumbh in Hardwar before Babaji left his body. And Babaji never, ever stopped anyone touching him or coming near him. So in Kumbh, as usual, there were hundreds and thousands of people visiting him. And every time there was a Kumbh or a lot of people, he used to get sick. I mean, he used to get fever. Then when he got fever, he didn't eat. So this time he got fever and he didn't eat, but he didn't start to eat again, you know, however much we tried. And then finally he would take a little bit, a few mouthfuls or something, but he just got thinner and thinner and thinner. And then he wouldn't take anything. Then he was on liquids and just coconut juice and he got very, very weak. Very, very weak. We built a grass hut for him because he couldn't get in, you know, he couldn't walk. So anyway, yes, everybody thought that he was leaving his body. I kind of thought that he wouldn't. I didn't think he would leave me, you know. We have such arrogance. But even at the end, they all started singing Kirtan, and I wouldn't sing it because I knew why they were singing Kirtan. I mean, it's not that, I mean, of course, I sang Kirtan, I love Kirtan. But, you know, I knew why they were singing it, so, you know, I didn't want to believe it, you know. But then he did, he left. And we understood he had prepared everything. You know, we always used to say to him, Babaji, can we have a Kand Kirtan? And he used to say, you won't do it, you'll break it. So then we used to say, no, Babaji, we won't. We'll do it. We promise we'll do it. So then we started a Kand Kirtan of Maha Mantra.
Uh-huh.
It went on. Then he said, okay, if you want to start it, you can start it on Yogini Ekadasi, which was, it's an Ekadasi in June. So then we started it. And I think it was 2 years. And he left his body on Yogini Ekadasi. So it was for us that he did it, you know, and on that day, when he left his body, nobody wanted to sit in Kirtan. Everybody wanted to sit by his body. And so somebody came to me and said, what shall we do? Everybody wants to be here. So then I realized it's Yogini Ekadasi, the day that we started it. So then I said, so, you know, you can do Parayan. You can. I mean, they did it. They did the proper Parayan. And then, he left his body at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Ekadasi Ekadasi. So then it was the hottest time of the summer. It was also the solstice, according to English.
English, yeah.
So hot. So they brought ice also and put big blocks of ice on either side of them, because everybody kept phoning people and saying, wait for us, we're coming, from Delhi or from everywhere. But then the next day, all the ashrams in Rishikesh, they all sent their boats. Oh, it was very difficult to talk about, And then we took him. And also there was, the year before there had been a big flood, and Dave Daru, it's Cedarwood, a huge Dave Daru had come. And we had had it cut into plank because it had come on the beach. And they had made a throne out of it. And there were a lot of planks left. Not a lot, but some. So they said to Babaji, Babaji, what shall we do with the other planks? We'll make something. He said, no, they have a purpose. So I said, what purpose? And he said, you put them. He told me where to put them. He said, you put them behind them. The Devi temple, and he said, you will know. So then I said, Babaji, what do you mean? He just said, you will know where I'm telling you. Then everybody said, we've got to make a box to put his body in. And I said, oh, Babaji. And I said, the wood is behind the Devi temple. So then we made a box, and then we brought him to the cave, and everybody did their last puja. And then they took him down to Ganges, and they bathed him, the babas. And then they put him in the box. And then the boats had all come. Everybody, all the ashrams wanted us to Babaji to go in their boat. But we put him in one boat with some of us, and everybody got into the other boat. Then we took it to the middle of the Ganga and put his body went in the Ganga.
In the Ganga. And
the evening before Babaji left his body, two sadhus came, Vairagi sadhus. And Babaji, he always knew him, but he was lying inside the grass hut. And he said to me, there are two babas outside, standing outside, give them food and someone to sleep tonight. It was those babas who did everything for us the next day, because we were all crying, And then after Babaji had his body was in the Ganga, they made khichdi for everybody. And anyway, these are long stories.
Oh.
Yeah, it was difficult.
So that phase, that particular phase of your life, what happened after that? Then, how did you then move through to get to this place?
Oh, yes, that was a little bit, that was difficult. I stayed, I think, for the 16 days. But, when sometimes, maybe often, when gurus leave their bodies, there's sort of differences of opinion in the ashrams about what should be done. And different people want to be the boss, So it was okay, but I didn't want the various suggestions. And it was very beautiful because it was so heartbreaking. I went to see a friend. They were all saying, oh, we have to do this and we have to do that. And I went to see a friend. I had never been to see him before. He was in another ashram ever. And he was reading a book. And then I started to tell him, you know, about what they were suggesting in the ashram, suggesting particularly that I should stay there. And I wanted to go. I was only there for Babaji. Mm-hmm. And when I started to tell him, he had put the book down and he said, okay, now I understand why you came. Read this. And he gave me a book. It was Sufi's story. And the story said that when a great one leaves, he is complete in himself. And there doesn't have to be a tradition afterwards. There doesn't have to be an ashram. There doesn't have to be someone else who sits there. What he came for, he's given you in your heart. And that's what he came for, to give you, each one of us, whatever he gave you, each one of us. So, I mean, it was the answer to my dilemma as whether I was supposed to sit there. So I left. And for me, you know, Babaji was my father and Gangotri is my mother. So I thought, okay, I'll go to Gangotri. Yes, I went to Gangotri. I went to Gangotri with the clothes on my back. I left everything else behind because it's also, you know, when people get upset, they say things which they don't really mean. So there were all sorts of accusations. You know, that you did this or you know, I mean, silly things, human things. You know, so anyway, so I left after the Bhandara, after the 16th, and I went to Mom. And I just took the clothes on my back, and a brahmachari took me to put me on the bus, and I just took the money for the bus fare to Gangotri. And on the way, there were some devotees coming, and they had a sari and a shawl, a chadar, that they brought for Babaji. For the shawl was, the sari was for me, and the chadar was for them. So they gave them to me. I gave them to Gangotri, I gave the chadar to Gangotri in the temple. When I went there, and I said, okay, Ma, you know, my father's gone now, you have to look after me. So, I mean, then I stayed in Gangotri for 4 years, winter and summer, and for then another 4 years in the summer.
Then was there kind of there, or did you, how did you, what was there at Gangotri?
Gangotri. apart from Gangotri, nothing, but you didn't need anything. I knew the name of an ashram. So you arrived there at night on the bus. It was dark. So I asked for that ashram. I went there and it was all made of wood. I sat on a veranda and then some babas came and they asked me where I had come from.
Which was the ashram? Sorry, Nani.
Morni Baba's ashram. I mean, I didn't know Morni Baba. He wasn't in his body anymore. But I sat on the veranda, and somebody came and asked me if I'd eaten, which I hadn't. It was the next Ekadasi, so I wasn't going to eat anyone. I didn't eat on Ekadasi. So then they asked me where I'd come from, and I told them from Babaji, and they all started to talk about Babaji. Oh, that was such a great place. Like, you can eat as much as you want there. And I was so touched. that these Babas, poor Babas, not famous Babas, not big Babas with big ashrams, but just poor sadhus were remembering Babaji because they could eat as much as they wanted in his ashram. And that was, you know, that was, he was, it was beautiful. It was so touching. And then they said they opened a room, which was full on clothes and everything. And they said, oh, the Babas who live in here have gone to Gomuk today. You can sleep in here tonight. That was it. These are long, long stories. You can't tell them.
I can understand that, yeah. Yeah. But then I know that you have a little ashram of your own in Uttarkashi.
Huh.
And so how many years? Okay, there is a lot of ground to cover.
You cut out whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to cover everything, but I guess, you know.
Anyway, this is for you.
I know.
For you, and you can share what you want.
Yeah, no, I want to know everything. I wish I could spend like a whole week with you and just that's what I like. So if you can just kind of guide us in, you know, what happened with after that, did you spend a lot of time doing your own practice while you were in Gangotri, and then kind of what happened after that?
Yes, I used to meditate. I used to sit by Gangaji meditating, even in the snow, even when it was snowing. And I used to read a little, and mostly meditate. And then I was there. Then, you know, I used to sit on the snow, and just with a piece of plastic or something underneath, so in the winter. And I got quite bad rheumatism. So after a while, everybody said that it would be, you know, people that visited said it would be a good idea if I, you know, if we came down a bit, if we had an ashram. So then there was an ashram near Uttarkashi. That one was still there for another 4 years. I spent the summers there, and then I came down here. It was quite hard in the winter there. That's a whole another long story. And then in Uttarkashi, it's not as cold. It's cold in the winter, but not as cold. So then there was a little ashram there. And I was still doing a lot of meditation and a lot of study. And then I was writing Sanskrit hymns to Babaji, written a lot of. That was because I wanted to write about him. But I tried in English, I tried in Hindi, nothing was good enough.
So coming to Ganga Prem. And the whole, you know, it's a very specific hospice for cancer patients. Is that correct?
Right.
So how did you connect with people in this way to help them? Like, how did you find this path of wanting to help people to find a good way to leave the body? Like, how did that happen? And how was it related to cancer specifically? Or was there any particular reason that it was like that? Or how did that all come about?
Well, Nina, I can't say I ever wanted to help. I used to have great respect for people that didn't say well, but it wasn't really my path. But in 1999, everybody in my family except my little brother died of cancer. So I had some sort of connect with cancer. And when you, you know, when people keep that you know or keep dying of cancer, you kind of, everything that goes wrong with your body, you suspect to be cancer. But anyway, I was quite ill for some time in 99. And not only me, but everybody thought it was cancer in the stomach. So I had an operation in Delhi in 99 to remove the cancer, but there was no cancer. But they, you know, got some other things. They put, fiddled about, they put some other things right in there. Then I stayed in contact with that oncologist, because I still wasn't very well. And I didn't want to stay in Delhi. He said I had to stay in Delhi for 6 months or something. So I had come back to the ASRA. So we were in touch. Then somebody else in my ASRAM actually got cancer. And I took her to that doctor. He diagnosed and operated on her. She was a foreigner. And not a wealthy foreigner, but she had some money and she wanted to donate it to cancer in India. And the doctor, I asked him, and he made several suggestions, including hospice, which she was really interested in. But she said, I don't have enough to build a hospice. So, but she said, I can give it, maybe it can be the start of a hospice, you know, the first donation in a fund. So he said, Dr. Diwan said that he would, you know, he would give it to a friend who had some medical something trust. And she said, no, I'm not giving it to anyone except you. So he made a little trust. He asked me to be on it. And I said, no, no, Fia. I'm not going to be on any trust. And then they set it up anyway. Then he started to write some material for it. And he sent it to me to correct. Somebody in the ashram had a laptop. I didn't know how to use one. But with her help, I corrected this pamphlet for him. That was the beginning. And then, you know, we sort of started talking about, you know, collecting money to build a hospice and everything. And then I said, you know, I started speaking to people. So they said, well, what are you doing? And we weren't doing anything. And I said, look, Dr. Diwan, you know, we need to do something. And we can't just ask people for money, you know, that we hope to build a hospice one day. So we decided to have monthly cancer clinics. Mm-hmm. So we started to do that in Rishikesh. We were looking for land in Rishikesh. We found some land. We bought a little piece of land. And then we started these cancer clinics.
So they were sort of like mobile clinics?
He would come from Delhi once a month. Right. And it just so happened, he said, oh, I've heard about this clinic in an empty place. Maybe we could use it. But then he went and asked those people, and they said it's actually run by another samstha, another place. So you'll have to ask them. So he told me, we'll have to find somebody. And I said, oh, my Guru Bhai is the manager there. You know, so then it was, then I asked him, can we use those premises for a cancer clinic? And then he said, well, of course. So then we started having cancer clinics there, then we set up an office there.
Then can I just ask you one thing about cancer clinic? Because my understanding, you know, when you have a clinic, is that you're helping to heal people or to help them get better. So how does that relate to hospice? And they were two different things.
Well, no, because what we did, because at the beginning we couldn't do anything. This is, so we just started a clinic where he's one of the very top oncologists in India. So he used to come every month. We advertised. People would come and he would just tell them what tests they needed, and what they needed to do. He gave clinical, there was no OJAR, there was nothing, just advice. So, of course, we started to get a lot of cancer patients that were terminally ill and had nowhere to go. So then I asked some friends and myself, whenever I was in Rishikesh, we started to visit people in their homes. But we were just lay people, you know. So then one of my friends said, look, this woman that I'm visiting, they have terrible wounds, Nina. And she said, no, I can't dress her wounds, and the smell is so bad. I can only talk to her. I can only sing to her. But she needs a nurse. Her clothes are full of blood and pus. So then we hired our first nurse. Mm. And she traveled about in an auto rickshaw, going to people's homes and doing dressings, giving free medicines. We did this. And then she said, well, we need a vehicle. I need a vehicle because, you know, she couldn't reach everyone. That's when Pooja joined us. She had visited me in my ashram with her brother, who I knew. Anyway, she joined us, and things just changed then. She's quite dynamic. So, you know, she got us a vehicle and then another nurse. And then gradually we got a big sponsorship to build the hospice. And the hospice was built in 2017. We'd been doing home care for 10 years by then. Okay. So, yeah, so the actual inpatient started in 2017.
And that you said you had found some land, and so that's the land on which you built the...
Yeah. It's only a small piece. We sincerely wish it was bigger because, you know, we can only have a maximum of 14 inpatients, and we have to turn people away. Because now we're so well known, you know, we usually have between, it varies, but between 150 and 300 home care patients. We have three cars going every day doing home care in Hardwar, Dehradun, and Rishikesh. We've opened a tiny, it's an ashram, but they've given us a couple of rooms. We've opened an office in Dehradun because then it cuts out 3 hours of traveling time. We can see more patients.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I mean, we would like to be bigger. One is financial, obviously. It's expensive because we don't charge anything for any patient. And the inpatients have a carer as well. That food is totally free, stays free, obviously. So it's a lot. It costs a lot to run it, actually. So
how many paid staff do you have that you have to have?
I think there's about 45 because we have 12 nurses. We have a resident doctor. Then we have drivers. We have four drivers for the home care, and one has to be there for emergencies. Then we have guards. We have four guards. Then we have cleaners. We have six cleaners, three household, you know, who clean the floors and the windows and the doors, and three who look after the patients. Vomit and feces and everything, mm-hmm. and the toilet. Then we have two cooks, two cooking assistants, because food. It's mostly that a lot of them are on liquid diet.
Yes, I noticed that, yeah.
And they have, for food, they are there. We have two gardeners so that those who can walk, or even if we take them on the wheelchairs, they can sit in the garden. We have a pujari for the temple. We have a washerwoman. There's lots of them. We have people in the office, four people in the office.
Do you have volunteers as well? Are there people who like to volunteer their time, and is that helpful for you?
Yeah. We used to, before COVID, we had quite a few foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
We have, now we have more Indian volunteers. Sometimes we have some IT people working in the background from all over the world, people. So we've got, you know, like HR people, we've got web people, we've got, they're all volunteers. We can't afford, you know, anyone permanent. And then sometimes people come to the hospice and volunteer. People come and do kirtan, come and do sundarkan. And sometimes we had a volunteer physiotherapist that's not with us at the moment. Sometimes we had volunteer yoga teachers. We love them because they teach the staff. It's nice for the staff to do yoga and meditation.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Dancing. You know, mantra chanting, the patients love it. Is there anybody who can come out? Like when you sang there, you know, the ones who can come, they come out, and the others, we open the doors so they can hear.
So wonderful. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that struck me as soon as I walked into the hospice was the beautiful mandir in the, like, before you walk in, you have to go have darshan. I mean, you don't have to, but you want to go. Darshan, yeah. Before
you
go
into
the
whole.
It's very
the center.
Yeah.
Ganga, one of her names, you know, is Sukadayani. Sukadayani is her name. And I thought a lot about what shall we call her? You know, Ma Ganga, obviously, but what special name? And you know, some of the names that. But I didn't want it to be too poignant because our patients are dying, all of them. But Sukadayani is beautiful because our patients are happy. She gives them happiness, you know. And then Sankatamochan is there, Hanumanji, he's there.
Yes.
And Dhanvantri, he's there. He's the Lord of Medicine and Healing.
Yeah.
And Chief is there. Navadesh
was family. So, you know, this is such a different type of life than what you lived all those years ago when you were practiced by yourself. And, you know, for many people, it's the other way around. You do worldly things first and then, you know, do vanaprastha. And so you've done the opposite. That's what's been here.
Yeah.
And I have to ask you, you know, Nanima, it's just trying to get anything done in this world is hard. It's a challenge. And particularly fundraising, finding a way to get cash flow. And, you know, how do you keep that? How do you keep that faith? Because now you've embarked on this project, there are people who rely on you, and how do you keep the faith that it's all going to work out? How do you do that?
See, Nina, really, I don't. You know, it's up to him. I've told him, and I've told her, they're not separate. But you know, if you want it, you've got to look after it. I can't do anything. You don't need it. It's the same. It runs on the same principle as spiritual life. It's only when we actually understand we can't do anything that, you know, he can start to do his own work. You know, we're just puppets. Bhagwan says in Gita Ji, you know, I move all beings around. Like puppets on a machine, you know, and that's how it is. So it's only when you can stop doing something, thinking you can do anything, that he can get on with his work. You know, Babaji told me a story years ago, and I never understood it then. So many things I never understood then, but he said, you know, it's like a sheep. it gets caught in barbed wire, and the farmer is trying to undo it to set it free. But it's so busy struggling itself that as fast as he undoes it in one place, it gets caught in another. So he said that, you know, the farmer can only take the sheep out when it will sit still and be quiet and let him do his work. So that's how it is with my life, and that's how it is with the hospital. He runs it, not me. I mean, it's a joke that I run it. I never even saw a computer until a few years ago. I never did any work. Well, I did a lot of work, but, you know, I worked in shops when I was at school. I did all sorts of things. But not running a hospice, not fundraising, not running anything. It's true. The strange thing is about the scriptures, of which I've read a lot. We read them, and we just read them, and they're just words. But they're not actually just words, they're true. Every single word is true. You know, and it's only when that dawns on us after years and years, you know, that we can surrender and give up our effort. that's how it is the Babaji runs. Bhagwan runs it. I don't know who runs it. Somebody does. It's not me.
Yeah.
I'm working for it. I tried.
Yeah. We have to put in our effort, you know, and knowing.
Yes, we do.
Knowing.
See, we try. Hanji, sorry.
Try, go ahead.
Yes, we try. We try. And, you know, it's like, you know, I always think, when Krishna held up Govardhan on his little finger, and all the bollocks were under there with their little sticks as well. They thought they were helping. But Bhagwan's happy with that. You know, they all thought they were helping him hold up the mountain. They weren't helping. But he was happy to see them trying to help. And that's why he loved them so much. That's why he loved us, because we're trying. You know? Not because we can actually do anything. Because we try.
Right. Well, we try on the material plane, but we also try by doing our sadhana and our practice, right?
Yeah.
If you want to just to share before we close, is there a particular verse or a line, since Gita Ji is your part of your main practice, is there something you'd like to share with us that you can just recite and tell us what it means?
I don't know if I can recite now. Gita Ji used to be off by heart, but now I probably can't recite without seeing it. But okay. I can tell you the meaning.
Tell us, yes.
It means, remember me at all times, bow to me, speak to me. It means give everything to me, do everything for me. Everything in Gita Ji, in the third chapter, it says that do all your actions as a yajna, you know, as a worship. All our actions, and you know, just don't worry. You know,
did you add that in there?
Yes, I added it. I added it, but he said it as well. It means, because, you know, if you don't worry when you give up. You have to do everything for him. And okay, even if you feel that you're the doer, do it for him. You know, Ramakrishna Paramahansa said that if you can't be one with him, if you can't dissolve the ego, then just make it into his da, you know, make it into his slave. So just do everything for him and see him everywhere. You know, they draw pictures of Krishna in the heart of everything. It's not quite like that. But it's all him. It's nothing else. There's nothing else. It's just to believe that, do your sadhana. That's all. There's nothing else to do except that. And it's all sadhana.
Well, that will close. That's a beautiful teaching for us to go home with. Thank you, Nani Ma. Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. Thank you, Nina.
I hope I'll see you soon again.
I hope so. For sure, for sure.
I would love to. Someday. Ram Ram. Before we go, I do want to let the people who are listening know how it is that they can support Ganga Prem Hospice from abroad, if possible, and also from within India in terms of making financial donations to your work.
Yes. Nina, in India, it's very easy because they can just send a NEFT transfer to us. And I mean, we do have a website. Or if anybody needs to know anything, they can just write to info@gangaprahmhospice.org. From abroad, at the moment, our what we call FCRA, our permission to take funds from abroad, it's under renewal process. There is a trust in America called End of Life Care International. People can donate to them, and as soon as those donations will come to it, as soon as ours thing is processed, finish the process.
Can you repeat the name one more time of the U.S. entity?
End of Life Care International. They send us funds. So if anybody donates to them, they can just write that I would like my donation to go to Ganga Prem.
Earmark it for you.
Yes. Yeah. At the moment, they can't donate directly from abroad. From India, people can donate anytime they want. We're very happy.
Okay. Well, you have all our well wishes and prayers for Ganga Ji to flow through this Ganga Prem.
Yeah.
And support and, yeah, and provide as she always does.
Thank you. Thank you.